The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. Well, it's that time on Wednesdays when we bring you our regular rendition of ConsiderThis.ca. That's a website hosted by my good friend and co-host here on Wednesdays for well over a year now. We've been doing this, and we are going to do our year in review. So we've got a couple of interviews that we've done that we're going to talk about. We're also going to talk about just the year as it was. Lots to talk about for this year, the election. We had some great guests on as well. Rob, what did you want to kick it off with, my friend?
Well, just first of all, general impressions of the last year, Dave. Well, how did you feel it went? Amazingly enough, out of the 52 weeks, we've been here every week. And there's only been six times when we haven't had a guest, when it's just been you and I talking.
Is that right?
Six times. And I'm really proud of that, because I think one of the things, or the strengths of this hour that you and I have together, is that we get to talk to people for a good 45, 50 minutes, uninterrupted, sometimes about only one or two issues, and really probe them. And, you know, you don't get that a lot in radio anymore.
No, usually it's sound bites, a couple of minutes here and there. You might get 5 minutes of an interview with somebody. That's the other thing, too. I mean, I've done some great interviews with other guests who've been provided by CBC, for instance, some great film producers, and you know, just the opportunity to go that extra mile.
Yep.
You know, we recently, I had some folks in here, a couple of imams from Brampton and Milton, and a couple of fellows who were Syrian refugees. They just marveled at the fact that, you know, they said the same thing. When they've done television interviews, they're like 5, 10, 15 minutes at the longest.
Yep.
But to be able to sit down and actually have a conversation, you know, and because conversations are like baseball, you know, it's not over till it's over.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. And you know what? It's really interesting, too, because we'll talk for about 20 or 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden, it just, as I was listening to the interviews, the gears change.
Mm-hmm.
And that was last 10 minutes. I tell you, some of the best questions have come out of it. And you know, we've got some really important statements from people and important things that I think need to be out in the community and people need to hear.
Well, I was particularly proud of having Colin Brown in here to talk about racism and to talk about issues of race. And we've had him on a couple of times to talk
about. Three times in total.
Is that right?
No kidding.
And I mean, the subject never goes away. And I've actually been, you know, he's actually opened my eyes to quite a few things when it comes to, you know, dealing with other people as something more than just another person, you know, and realizing that, you know, being colorblind means that you have to discount a whole aspect of who a person is. And that's unacceptable.
Yep.
You know, and I after seeing him and I watched a documentary, you know, the Brown Eye Blue Eyes exercise, you and I talked about that as well. And I mean, that's a really eye-opening exercise. That's one that shows you that, you know, oh, I'm not a racist, I have black friends. Yeah, you know what, that's not enough. It's not enough.
The other thing about Colin that's amazing is he's so candid. And yet he's so positive. At the end of it, he really, it's always on an uptick. Even though he gets very serious and gets down to it in the nitty-gritty, and he doesn't back up. He's very, he likes to end on a positive, and he's got a certain personality, but and yet candid. I can't think of anybody more candid.
Very strong proponent of speaking what he thinks, and whether you like it or not. And
absolutely.
That's what conversations are about, right?
Absolutely.
Now, we've had some great guests in here over the last year, and we've got three clips we're going to play for you, some of the great interviews.
Well, Let's go back to January and just go through.
Let's
talk about the year because it's been really interesting. We started off, and I don't know if you remember this, but do you remember Mythbusters and Dr. Jennifer Gardy?
Yes.
She was really fascinating. I thought she was so interesting. She came in by phone, which is, she's based in Vancouver, but we talked to her about that was through your connections, through CBC. I got to talk to her about some of her myth busting and a lot of the amazing science she does. Then there was Bill Patchett came in, talked about fundraising. The Northumberland Coalition Against Poverty, Deb O'Connor came in and talked to us.
I don't think we've had her back since then, have we?
No, but we should.
We need to bring her back because issues of social justice are issues I love to talk about primarily here. I mean, that's why we talk about racism. That's why we talk about immigration. We talk about poverty, housing. I mean, those are all issues related to social justice and social well-being, you know. And like Ben Burt said on Monday, you know, well, that makes you a socialist and so what? You know,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, to quote Jerry Seinfeld, right?
Right on. But interestingly enough, in February, we had United Way CEO Linda Kay and Community Development Officer Linda Isak came in and talked to us about their fabulous projects up in Warkworth. And really interesting, their approach to community development, and certainly something that I think should be more broadly adopted by municipal governments and social agencies, because their work is just so grounded in grassroots consultation and really listening to what people have to say and then responding.
Well, that was the part that kind of floored me about that whole process, because they went up there as sort of an experiment, up into Warkworth, I believe.
That's
it is.
That's correct.
Where they're hosting these luncheons. And they went up there to sort of have a conversation with people, but they ended up finding out what the issues were, where the community needs were. And I think that maybe may have been something that helped encourage them to make their focus this year on the number of families that they've touched on in terms of raising, instead of just raising a number in terms of their fundraising this year, the numbers focused on the number of people that they can impact with the funds that they raise. And I think a lot of that came from that community networking, the sitting down with community groups and other volunteers and really the other stakeholders that the United Way does so much to help.
Absolutely. And you know, a fundamental shift in the psychology of what they do. I think, you know, we always think of things in terms of money, but to start to talk about it in terms of people, humanizing it, as you say, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's a really good observation. Also in February, we had Black History Month. And that was the first time, believe
that's
it or not.
That's when we had Colin on the first
Colin
time.
Colin Brown here in the studio. Mm-hmm. But we also had Kate Kelly, a poet from Peterborough, and also Rosemary Scaldier from the Ontario Black History Society.
Mm-hmm.
She called in and talked to us. And a really great opportunity to, as you were talking about earlier, but just to learn about Black history in the province and why it's so important, especially in rural areas like ours. So that was really cool. March was a different month, really packed. We had DBIA Andrew Hall come in and talk to us about what they were doing in the downtown. And there was, I think if you recall, the parking meters were still a kind of a testy issue. But he talked about all the programs they did. We had Deputy Chief Paul Vandergraaf came in and talked to us about the Cobra Police business plan. And sure set us on a straight path to, you know, here's what
we're
going to
do. Another conversation where all you have to do is ask the right questions. That's the other benefit of the long conversation, though, because, you know, when you prepare for a 5 or 10 minute conversation, there are things that in your mind are off limits. But when you've sat down for more than half an hour, you've probably already, you've gone through in that time everything that was expected to be discussed. And now there's time.
Yes.
And normally it's goodbye time, but on our show it's not goodbye time. Now it's time to get into the deeper aspects of the conversation. It's sort of like, you know, helping them drop their guard in the conversation, and then you can ask them the tougher questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also had the Coburg Birdman, Bill Thompson, came on, and that was I found that a fascinating conversation because, I mean, he so completely and so dedicated to what he was about, just immovable. And, you know, I can't help but think, you know, we're almost coming up now to that time of year. I have no doubt that he's going to be back out there and he's going to be doing that. It's mm-hmm. going to be, I don't know about what you think. What do you think?
Well, he said as much. He said as much last year that he was going to do it. Again, council has put forth this. This is a new council as well, too. This is the other thing, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what they said was, okay, if there's going to be a situation where you know the weather, and I mean, everyone knows what the weather's going to be like. You get a rough estimate anyway from mm-hmm. Environment Canada, what it's going to be like. And if it's going to be particularly cold for the next few days or for a length of time, you can apply to council. All you have to do is put a motion at council to have them waive the bylaw during that time period, and they've already said they'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe he may have had some cooling off over the summer until this time period now, and he may say to himself, okay, well, maybe I'll do that this year. And there are other people that said that they would do that if he didn't anyway. So mm-hmm. I think there's a mechanism in place now mm-hmm. to avoid that type of situation. It's all a matter of whether or not that will be exercised.
I'd be curious to see how it folds out, because determination and his steadfastness in his position
mm-hmm.
Didn't sound like he was up to doing that. He was sort of like, you know,
well, he said at that time he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah. So you're right. Well, let's see how that all unfolds. Another great conversation we had was with Bill Wensley about pharmacare in March.
Mm-hmm.
And that we were starting to hear rumbles about a potential federal election, a critical issue. It did get raised in the federal election, and Bill was working on a position paper for the Liberal Party at that time. Really interesting, and it'll be. Do you think it's going to come about with this government?
Well, there's going to be some conversation around it. I can guarantee you that.
Absolutely.
Whether or not, I was talking about this. I mean, this goes back to that whole thing that I bring in. I brought it up on a number of during a number of our conversations. This me versus we thing.
Yes.
This, you know, everyone's when it's, you know, steamrolling ahead, and you got all kinds of resources financially or otherwise. You know, most people, and I guess that's the greed aspect of the me, is that, you know, well, I don't worry about the next guy. I'm worried about me. I'm getting mine. Mm-hmm. And then when you find yourself in a position where you need, and you are in need, and you are no longer able to fend for yourself, you know, God forbid, all of a sudden you turn from a me to a we person going, oh, I thought the government was here to provide this service and that service. So, I mean, that's going to be a difficult issue. I think we need a national pharmacare strategy. I think mm-hmm. there definitely needs to be some tighter controls over purchasing, for instance, for mm-hmm. bulk purchasing for pharmaceuticals. There needs to be, I think, maybe a national dispensary that mm-hmm. the provinces can go to. That's something that we talked about with Bill Wensley. So there needs to be a conversation first. And right now there has been this unwillingness to even have the conversation.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Then in April, we talked to Andrew Gregg. Now, he was one of the ones that you talked about when mm-hmm. Through CBC and your contacts. We had a fabulous conversation with him. He was he's a documentary filmmaker, and he was talking about the Franklin Expedition
yep.
and what was discovered there. I found that so riveting. I wasn't here. I wasn't able to be here, but you did that interview for Consider This Live.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really fascinating. Really, really fascinating. I remember him describing the mission, how significant it was. It would be a modern-day equivalent of us going to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah, the modern-day equivalent. You know? I mean, at that time in global history, that was the moonshot, right?
Yep.
So, again, the relationships that he managed to build with the people and the communities up there, and, you know, the fact that the Inuit knew where the Franklin Expedition, at least the one ship was,
mm-hmm.
For a long, long, long time, and no one was paying attention. I tried to goad him a couple of times in that conversation into talking about, you know, what this mission meant to the federal government.
Yes.
And, you know, kudos to him for not being drawn in, I got to say.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, a lot of what happened during the last government was about optics. Mm-hmm. And they spent a lot of money and a lot of time really sort of wrapping the Canadian flag around this mission, which, I mean, let's be frank, it was a British naval operation. It wasn't a Canadian mission. Yeah. It wasn't even remotely a Canadian mission, but, you know.
Well, also, too, I mean, you know, it, on one hand, you have the federal government of the day making massive cuts to Parks Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I know just locally that the Trent Canal, which is run by Parks Canada, they were getting their money slashed. And here they were spending all this money to go up and find a mm-hmm. ship up in the Arctic, which, you know, which thing do you want to do? But being a history lover, I truly enjoyed that interview, and I appreciated how you mm-hmm. handled it. It was really, really wonderful.
Well, and I want to thank Andrew, Greg, and just the many people who've been able to join us here on the Drive Time from the CBC, from 90th Parallel Productions, and from Rick Mercer's show as well. We've had Rick on a number of times
yes.
as well. So.
Yes, indeed.
It's been a crazy year, folks.
It has. It truly has.
We're going to take our first break for the hour. When we come right back, we're going to be talking more about the year that was, 2015, right here on Northumberland 89.7. You're listening to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. And welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio for Consider This Live is Rob Washburn. He's my regular co-host here at Northumberland 89.7 on Wednesday evening. She'll hear us talking politics. One of the other guests we had on our show as well, I had on the show anyway, was John McKay,
yep.
The Liberal member for Scarborough South, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he and I campaigned against each other a couple of times in the 90s, and it was just a great time to talk to him. We talked to him about Bill C-51
yes.
and what the federal government was going to do about that. I remember at one point I asked him a question. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was, you know, the way I like to phrase my questions yep. in basically, there's no way to answer it except honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember him saying to me, well, you know, Dave, you've done a really good job there. You know, you laid out a wonderful path. You've dropped rose petals in front of me, but I'm simply not going down that road, Dave. And I think that was pertaining to C-51 and the commitment. I wanted to get a commitment from him that as a member that they would be, you know, staunchly doing everything they could to get rid of C-51, not just change it, but...
Yep.
To get rid of it
entirely.
Well,
it was a really critical thing that you talked about many, many times. Even the times that I wasn't here, I remember listening to you going on. I know you felt very, very strongly about that. Now that you've had some time to look back and there's been a change of government, how do you feel about it now, Dave?
Well, you know what? I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day because he's like, man, you're like really government paranoid. I said, you know what? Here's the thing. I wouldn't be afraid of a government having powers to do some of the things that they want to do. You know, before.
Mm-hmm.
But after the last 10 years, what that has taught me is, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, people write legislation because they want to protect the broadest number of people possible. But if there are ways to get in and around a system in ways that will, you know, trample on people's rights and our charter freedoms and all those other things, if you give a government, even a benevolent government, that power, there's no telling what the next government is going to do or how they're going to use that power.
Uh-huh.
You know, prior to Stephen Harper, I never would have assumed that we would do those things in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But after Stephen Harper, I know that we can because I know we have.
Yep.
And so I'm not concerned. You know, there's nothing in the charter that says, because the statement you always hear from people is, well, if you have nothing to hide, you shouldn't worry about it.
Right.
But there's nothing in the charter that says, if I have nothing to hide. There's nothing in the charter that says, I have to have something to hide first in order to want my rights protected. Nothing in the charter. The charter just says, you have these protections. There's no ambiguity there.
Yep.
You know, and as George Carlin said, if they can take away your rights, then they're not actual rights. They're just privileges.
Well, do you remember your conversation we had with Warren Kinsella in June? And you argued with him the same points.
Mm-hmm.
I know that conversation deeply disturbed you.
It did disturb me. No, I was kind of shocked, frankly, because because I know Warren Kinsella from the past. I've read his stuff mm-hmm. in the media.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen his work when he was working with Kretchen. So, I mean, I had an idea. But, the problem with certain laws is that they're ideologically driven.
Yep.
And, you know, law and order isn't about ideology. It's about those two things only, law and order.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, I mean, in the U.S., they're having huge problems right now with regards to their constitution. And certain people have rights, certain people don't have rights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was the case recently that where a grand jury chose to acquit two officers for shooting a boy in a park who was playing mm-hmm. with a pellet gun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was a little boy, I used to go to the park and play with pellet guns.
Mm-hmm.
Just get out of the Don River and, you know, do things with the pellet guns and shoot cans and stuff. It's sad for me to realize that if I was a black kid in the United States, I would be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I believe that with all my heart. If I was a black child in America playing with a pellet gun, there's a really, really good chance that I would be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but you know, you counter that with this open carry legislation, and you see people walking around grocery stores and Walmarts and Staples
mm-hmm.
all carrying weapons, hunting weapons, all white people. I have never seen a picture of a black man walking down the street in an open carry community where he hasn't been detained, arrested, and or shot. So it seems to be there's a huge double standard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the slippery slope. They have the Patriot Act in the United States. We don't have that in Canada. Now, they brought in some measures after 9/11. Mr. Kretschmann brought in some. But they all had, you know, they were dates. There were expiry dates attached. Mm-hmm. This legislation, C-51, has none of that.
Yeah.
Now, the Liberals say that they're going to fix it. They're going to fix the broken parts. They're going to get rid of the parts that violate the charter, and they're going to try and do what they can to strengthen other aspects of it so that there are no charter violations. But if that's not something that can be done, then I would hope that they would simply get rid of it. If they realize that the fixes just aren't going to be there, mm-hmm. or they're not going to be sufficient, mm-hmm. then they need to get rid of that legislation. Do I believe that they will? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
We did interview Chief Jim Bob Marsden up in Alderville.
Yeah.
And we did talk to him about this very subject. So we do have a clip of that, and we're going to play a quick bit of that clip. We got some other clips coming our way as well to our conversation with the Coburg Taxpayers Association and two soldiers who attended our show for our Remembrance Day special. But here is Jim Bob Marsden and I talking about Bill C-51.
Do you believe that the Liberals are going to, because again, and I had John McKay in here for almost an hour, we were talking about Bill C-51 at the last mm-hmm. part of the show. And, I mean, he said, look, the reality is this, and, you know, there are a number of Canadians that still feel that security is an issue. But what he said was, you know, they fought for amendments that both parties completely torpedoed. There are provisions in Bill C-51 that are required to protect Canadian people. This is the Liberal position on this. This is obviously the government position. But the NDP says, no, it's a completely piece of crap bill. Let's just get rid of it entirely. Is it in the best interest, do you think, of Canadians to look at the bill and get rid of the bad pieces of the legislation and keep portions of it? Or should the whole thing just go?
I think portions of it for a First Nation, if we go out and demonstrate, it could be, oh, there's a terrorist group. Mm-hmm. And so what they would do is any funding agreements?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So do you believe that the Liberal Party is going to do whatever is necessary to change that bill while still trying to maintain security?
I'm not sure if they will or not.
Mm-hmm.
No. They could have fought, what was that other bill? Bill C-10, where it protected our rivers and lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And thousands of rivers and lakes, yeah. I must add.
Yeah, we went from, I think, 80,000 rivers and lakes protected down to like 1,500.
Yeah, so the Conservative government opened it up to please the pipelines. They can go through without mm-hmm. getting in too much, you know.
It gets rid of a lot of the environmental regulations,
right, yeah.
for sure. But again, that's something that Conservatives brought
forth. People were saying, well, what's the First Nations going to do about mm-hmm. this? Oh, okay, we'll hit the streets, you know, mm-hmm. protest a little bit. But that's Bill C-10, that's when Idle No More developed.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It was the grassroots people, not the chiefs and councils. Mm-hmm. It was the grassroots people where a lot of Canadians should have stood up with the First Nations. Then, okay, this has got to stop.
Absolutely, right.
You know.
Yep.
Is that activism that ignited under the Idle No More movement, is that going to translate, though, come the fall into votes and to the ballot box?
Not through the Idle No More. It's going to be, I think, a message from our own leaders saying, mm-hmm. get out there and vote,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless you're happy with this government.
All righty. So that was Chief Jim Bob Marsden of the Alderville First Nation. That was our conversation when he was in the studio.
So, Dave, do you think that last question got answered in October?
I think it did. That question about whether or not Idle No More was going to have an effect in the election. I think we saw a majority Liberal government elected. First time in history, by the way, a party has gone from third party status to the big chair. Did that happen as a result of Idle No More? I think Idle No More had a lot to do with it because it started to make people aware. You know, the greatest thing a government, especially a government that is oppressive, can hope for is that people will become disengaged.
Yep.
And unfortunately, in this last federal election, and I think a lot of that had to do with the timing because it was such a long election, it gave people an opportunity to really go through party platforms, to listen to what the leaders were saying, try and cut through the BS, try and figure out what they weren't telling you. Yep. You know, lots of talk about the deficit and debt and you know, the government saying, oh, no, we're on track to a balance. And of course, now we find out that the government's cupboards have not only are they left bare, but they've probably been removed.
Well, but also, too, just to reflect a little bit on what Chief Marsden said, we saw a record number of Aboriginals elected to Parliament.
Yep.
And I think that was truly an initiative of them just getting out the vote and putting candidates forward. And I think, you know, the ball's now got some momentum. The Truth and Reconciliation is gathering momentum. It's going to be really interesting over 2016 to see where that momentum takes us and how far the government's prepared to go in terms of bringing about real reform and reconciliation with the First Nations.
Well, it was the largest increase in First Nations or Indigenous voter turnout in the history of this country.
Absolutely.
You know, and more people are becoming engaged. As you said, we see more members of the cabinet. Our Justice Minister, for the first time, not only is the Justice Minister a woman, but she's an Indigenous woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was this great clip I saw when they were going through the constitutional negotiations in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the gentlemen interviewed was a chief from the West Coast, Chief Wilson, who was talking about how, you know, he needed to get a country that the First Nations could trust the government. He said, you know, he had two kids. He said he's got two kids right now. One of them wants to be the prime minister. He says, I don't know why. And, of course, the audience laughed. And it turned out that that was Jody Wilson-Raybould's grandfather, who was speaking to Justin Trudeau, to Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and he said to the chief, "Well, you know what? Tell her to work on it. I'll still be here when she wants to give it a shot."
And, there you
go. He wasn't, but his son was, and his son was willing to say to that young woman, "You know what? You've got what it takes. You are going to make an incredible justice minister." And so now we have a First Nations female justice minister. And what a time, right? Truth and Reconciliation Commission's reports come out. They're talking about implementing all of those recommendations. Also, the missing and murdered Indigenous women, that issue is really coming to a fore. The other ironic part about that, in my mind anyway, is that, you know, they've managed to all of a sudden close a whole bunch of cold cases in the last little while. You know, the Tina Fontaine case was closed recently. They found the gentleman responsible. They found the scumbag responsible for that murder. Mm-hmm. So there really is a shift. And I think a lot of it has to do with there seems to have been a wake-up call after the October 19th election. Maybe I'm naive to say this, but I think Canadians are a lot more engaged than they were over the last 9 years. And I think because they see a reason to remain engaged, that's going to be something that may be a bit of a dragon's tail for the newly elected Liberal government.
Indeed. And a lovely anecdote, Dave. I hadn't heard that one, so that was really, really nice. Listen, going back, picking up where we left off, we were talking about April, but in May, we had Port Hope Mayor Bob Sanderson came in to us. And just after the budget, there was a tax decrease, something that I think he was very proud of, talking about staffing changes and all the big changes with the CEO, et cetera. And we talked about sharing services with Northumberland County.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back, Dave, what do you think? Has Port Hope really seen a big shift, do you think, in the last
Well, you know
months?
What? It's interesting that you say that, because Ben Bird and I talked about some Port Hope stuff on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, you know, the fact that at this point it seems to be a ship with a captain, not much of a crew. And it seems to be a one-man show. There's not a lot of public engagement. There doesn't seem to be a lot of desire for public engagement. There seems to be a do-as-I-say approach. It's very much a Stephen Harper government over in Port Hope. I got to say this. You know, Bob Sanderson said on my show, he said when you were here in the studio, remember we talked about the lawsuit?
That's right.
And he said it should have been settled over a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
I do indeed.
I should have reminded you on that one. We could have tried and pulled that clip up, because I really wouldn't mind getting my hands on Bob Sanderson's clip on that one. Because the long and short of it is, that trial came and went. It's been kicked to February now.
Yep.
And it's still ongoing.
Well, and interesting, too, because we also interviewed the Port Hope Ratepayers Association much later on, just a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that sort of caught me there was, you know, once they had some of their members elected to council, all of a sudden they become like a lame duck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, What happened? I thought maybe they would, you know, sort of still be the conscience, the mm-hmm. Jiminy Cricket of Port Hope citizens. Mm-hmm. And they've just, it seems like they've gone to sleep. And I think it's because they're all ideologically on the same mm-hmm. page. All the critics, you know, Port Hope Politics, the Facebook page is more boring than, you know, reading a grocery list. Mm. You know, it's all the spark seems to be
gone. It's interesting you say that because the National Citizens Coalition has been all over the Trudeau government since day one.
Yep.
The Canadian Taxpayers Federation has been all over Trudeau's government since mm-hmm. before the election.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're being called out on this. Now on social media, they're being called out. Like, where the hell were you guys for the last 9 years? Where were you when this was happening? Yep. And they're like, oh, no, we were all over the Harper government. Really? When? Show us an example. They're not able to do that. Why? Yep. Because as you said, it's about political ideology. And that's something we asked the Coburg Taxpayers Association about when we invited them on our show. The one gentleman ran actually to be elected here in Coburg. And so now people are saying, well, the Citizens Coalition, the Taxpayers Association, what is that? You guys are a bunch of disgruntled ex-candidates. So you're yep. all right-wingers who don't see your policy coming into play.
I think you've got a clip from them.
We do. I do have a clip here of our conversation with...
That was a critical piece in the puzzle. And mm-hmm. I think too, you know, I think you're right. I hope to have Mr. Sanderson back on the show early in the new year. I'd like to talk to both he and the Coburg mayor about what they think about what's going to happen mm-hmm. in 2016.
Well, and with transit now that becoming an issue in
Absolutely.
Port Hope as well. We talked about that with Ben Bird. How are people who work in Coburg going to get to Port yep. Hope and vice versa? The folks who live in Coburg and work in Port Hope. Here's a clip of our conversation with the Coburg Taxpayers Association.
Let me ask you this. You guys have lots of good questions and you've raised a lot of really important issues and some serious issues that need to be addressed by yeah. council. If you get the answers, are you prepared to accept them?
If they're reasonable answers, yes.
Well, what makes a reasonable answer then?
One that is fully justified and that they can say this is absolutely necessary.
In whose mind is justified? In yours?
I think in ours, yes.
So if it's justified in your mind, then you'll pack up and go away and find another issue to come back on.
There will always be issues out there, Bob, at the municipal level. We're never going to pack up our tent and go away. We're here to stay as a permanent fixture.
Now, one of the things that happened over in Port Hope was that the ratepayers group got so active and there was so much animosity between the council and the group that it froze a lot of the agenda, took up a lot of time of the councillors, and it became really hard to govern. How far are you prepared to go in terms of your advocacy? Are you prepared to go as far as they did in terms of freezing the council out? Or are you prepared to, if they give you an opportunity to speak and get your ideas out, is that going to be sufficient?
Well, I'd like to answer that question, please, Paul. I think that the best way to really show and explain what we're about is to go back to the municipal grants policy. I'm not sure people realize what we really did, but what we put together was using all the resources that we have, the skills and experience that we have, we put together a 15-page report to help council to perhaps give them some ideas that they consider to choose from best practices that they could perhaps look at and use in our own town if mm-hmm. they think that it would serve. I personally am not about going after these people. I'm a collaborative person. I want to work with people and I want to help people. And I feel as if we don't, maybe they're starting to listen, but I don't really feel that they listened in the past. And I think all I really want is for them to listen and consider some of the business-like ideas we have that may help them.
Well, you know, you raised a really good point there, because a lot of the troubles you have with the Sunshine List, for instance, and the increase in staffing, that happened with the previous council. So is it fair to say then that, you know, we haven't really given this council enough time to try and figure out where the inequities are and where the problems are? I mean, they've been in office now, what, since
November? December.
Since
well,
December.
Three of them have.
Yeah.
Well, I realize yeah. that. But what I'm saying is that we've got a different council now. We seem to have a council that's motivated more by accountability. I know that right now the deputy mayor is undergoing a major review of operations. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why the operations report wasn't released for the CEO, CAO. I know that the councillors that are there now, Councillor Rickerby, for instance, Deb McCarthy, the deputy mayor, they're all saying, look, we were brought in for accountability. We want accountability. So they're doing this operational review. And this is an operational review that they're not bringing in a consultant for. They're actually going through the numbers together. I know that that John Henderson is doing some really incredible work trying to parse through all of the sort of hidden things that have gone on. And and they're definitely looking at ways that they can make it a more accountable, more functionable, and also to determine whether or not the staffing levels need to be where they are. So isn't it reasonable then, since the majority of residents here voted for these folks, to give them at least a year, maybe a year and a half before we come out and say, this isn't happening and we're not happy with this?
But what we want to do is offer them a different perspective, do some of the legwork that perhaps they themselves don't have time to do or the staff haven't thought of.
So yours isn't an adversarial organization then? It's not about saying, you guys have wasted so much money.
No. I'd rather work with them collaboratively. And if we take a look at what happened with the municipal grants policy and our recommendation to them, they put on hold the one that they had so they could study ours.
Right.
And what we did, I like to think, is what we did is what a consultant would have done, except we didn't charge them.
Well, there you go. And so Paul Pagnuello saying right there that they aren't an adversarial group, that they're willing to work with council and offer some advice. Have not seen any of that as yet. Sounds a lot like Ronna Ambrose, actually. It's definitely, I'm getting a whiff of Ronna Ambrose's perfume. We're going to take a break, folks. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio is Rob Washburn. We've been doing our year in review. Just played that clip from the Cobourg Taxpayers Association. And, you know, you got to laugh. That's all I'm saying. By the way, I want to thank some of our regular callers as well. Ed White, I mean, the show really, I mean, I know you're efficient for clips, looking for something to play during the show today. And, I mean, you have done some great conversation as well. Ed, thank you for your contributions. Sometimes I think I should just, if he's got an afternoon off, we should just invite Ed in here on Wednesday and do 3 hours with us, because that would be just hilarious. But, you know, Deb and Deb as well, who calls in, regular listeners, some of my callers from out west, Calgary Glenn, for instance, who's called me a couple of times. He's got his own show out there, by the way, The View up here. So, again, Inky Mark.
Absolutely.
You know, we've had Brent Rathgaber on the show.
Absolutely. No kidding.
You know, a lot of conservatives phone into my show, which is kind of ironic.
Well, you know what? Inky Mark, I have to tell you, set records on my website, honestly, for downloading and for listening. And not just 10 or 15 seconds, but, you know, listening to the entire interview that you had with him. Absolutely phenomenal and really eye-opening. So, you've had some amazing guests. Dave, I don't know about you, but I think one of the most meaningful interviews and most wonderful interviews that we had was with the two soldiers.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember who they were, but it was Master Corporal Glenn Keefe and Corporal Tim Hoekstra, who joined us back in November. And it was for Remembrance Day, and we wanted to talk to somebody who was serving or currently served, and both of them are active.
Well, we were looking to get a perspective on what Remembrance Day means to currently serving or recently no longer active members of the Canadian Armed Forces, because we know it's a huge affair. We have no more World War I vets, and that's why we have Remembrance Day, to celebrate the 11th day at the 11th hour in the 11th year, or 18th year, actually. 1918 is when the war ended. But, I mean, it was very important for me to be able to talk to some new veterans, people who've been on active service in theater of war, just to get their perspective on what Remembrance Day means to them.
Mm-hmm.
And is it a different thing now that they've served than when it was when they were kids?
Well, one of the most fascinating things about listening to that interview was, to start off with, the answers were kind of short and to the point and very formalized. And what was fascinating was that as the hour unfolded, the answers became more detailed. We started hearing things that were absolutely mind-bogglingly candid about what it was like over there. And we've got a clip of them talking a bit about that.
Well, we're going to play that clip for you. So here it comes.
I have a last question, just as we're going, we're coming out of our time. I'd just like you to define for me what patriotism means to you.
Oh, wow.
Good thing it's an easy one.
Do you want to go, Tim?
Oh, yeah, thank you. You know, honestly, I don't know if I could answer this properly on the spot like this. I guess it's pride in the country, the country's accomplishments, history, not so much the geographical location, but like what we've done so far, our Canadian attitudes, Charter of Rights and Freedoms, stuff like that.
Are our attitudes that much different from those of the U.S. soldiers, having served with U.S. soldiers there? Do you find there's a difference is there a difference in mentality between what an American soldier is there for and what a Canadian soldier is there
for? Well, you can't really just call them all American soldiers. We worked with several different units. I've worked with Marines, like regular Marines. I've worked with guys from Force Recon or the MARSOC, as they call it now.
Mm-hmm.
We work with guys from 101st Airborne and 1st Special Forces Group. Most of those guys are equals, but then there are some groups that are not so much. They have a very different attitude, outlook, and level of training. But
what's your answer, Glenn?
Sorry, yeah.
I think myself, just listening to Tim there, you know, it's patriotism to me is the fact that the job I've done, if it's made a difference to make someone else's life easier. So, I mean, whether I do it here or overseas or on a humanitarian mission, if I can let somebody know, like, if someone sees a Canadian flag and says, you know something, those are good people, they've got good things, then I think that's what would mean to me is just the fact that we're in one of the greatest countries in the world, and we just want to keep it that way and be able to help and make a difference.
Well, and there you go. So those are two men who have definitely helped and made a difference. Again, I want to wish both of those guys a very happy new year, and I hope they had a fantastic Christmas this year. Because, you know, you could tell that conversation was really taking something out of those guys.
Absolutely. The honesty and the candor is what really impressed me about both of them. And when you listen to that clip, I mean, you really hear how heartfelt and they're speaking. I also, you know, you could, it may not be as poetic as Flanders Fields
mm-hmm.
by John McCrae, but certainly there's a poetry to what they're talking about. And it's coming from them in a very... it may not be artistic, but it certainly is in a very heartfelt way. And I a lot of times people are searching, what does Remembrance Day mean to me? Well, there you go. I mean, you put that on a poster and put it up somewhere, because I think that was very very moving.
Well, it was, and that last part there, it was Tim Hoekstra, I believe, who said, you know, when he is somewhere around the world and someone sees the Canadian flag and they look at him and say, we know that good people live there.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive, you know. Yes. And that was something that we gleaned too when I was speaking with the Syrian refugees who came here just a few weeks ago. I mean, they talked about how, you know, everyone knows about America. You know, but they didn't really hear much about Canada. The only thing they ever heard about Canada was that it was a peaceful country and was a very welcoming country, and they knew they would be safe here. They didn't know what they were coming to, what the weather was going to be like. And let's face it, I mean, where we are in southern Ontario, the weather's probably not too different from what it would be right now in that part of Iran, northern Iran, near mm-hmm. near Kurdistan, mm-hmm. Or on the Turkish-Iraqi border. So... you know, that whole thought, I mean, that's been the thought that I've had my whole life. That's one of those things about being a Canadian that has sustained me, is this mm-hmm. this knowledge that we are a very open and embracing and inviting country, and that we are willing to take people. and we are open to the diversity of every person.
And we're seeing that play out even today in the headlines with the refugees coming here, the groups like Better Together, which we had on our show, Hilary Vellery and Gloria Peters-Mathels. You know, they're doing amazing work. There's other people, other groups trying to raise money to bring as many refugees here as possible. I mean, it's great to see all of this unfolding in a very, very different atmosphere than we've had for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a tweet from Deb, one of our regular listeners, because we were talking about pharmacare, and she said, which dollar will do more? She said, one spent on creating a healthy population with good nutrition and healthy living, or slapping on a pharma Band-Aid? My question to her would be, surely we have enough money to do both. That would be my response. Why is it an either or? You know, that's something that's going on in Ontario right now, because there's a huge focus in this province right now on healthcare, but the real focus has been on preventative healthcare and all of that. And what we're seeing is a lot of money that's going from other frontline services to go into these other programs, which are just as admirable to keep people healthy. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to disengage people, I think, from the actual process of getting medical attention. They're trying to, you know, stay healthier, eat better. You know, if you need a little physio, maybe you want to do some activities and stuff like that. And that's all great advice. But when you are ill and you need frontier workers and staff and a place to go, that really needs to be a priority at the same time.
Absolutely.
It's the choice of Solomon, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know, we've been fortunate too, because we've talked about healthcare multiple times. We had the CEO and the chairman of the board of the hospital, Linda Davies and Jack Russell, back in May came to visit us. We've talked about it numerous times in conversations between you and I about what's going on at the hospital. I mean, we're waiting to see this final report come out about what changes are going to be made. But one of the big things that has to happen, especially in rural Ontario and in our area, is long-term care. You know, we're lacking the facilities. So, you know, once you have to leave the hospital, where do you go? And you know, I know we're going to see a revamping province-wide of the community care system and, you know, transferring some of the powers to the LHINs, which I must confess, I have a lot of question marks about why is that is.
Well, that goes to the point I was making a moment ago, which is they've got these various groups that are set there to design healthcare criteria.
Yep.
But, you know, healthcare criteria is a conversation.
Yep. And we had that fantastic PATH program. And, you know, I'm not sure right at the moment where that sits. I know that the funding for that was sort of coming to an end. But these are all questions for 2016. And you know, as we look forward, what do you think is going to be on the agenda, Dave, for the next year? So let's start locally. What do you think is going to be locally is going to be the hot stuff?
Well, obviously, transit is going to be a big issue in Port Hope, because if they go forward with this decision to kill it as they know it. Another issue is obviously going to be this health facility in Coburg, and who's going to fund that and how that's going to get funded. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Mm-hmm. Other issues too, though. I mean, you know, this idea that you don't have to be engaged with your electorate, that seems to be what's happening in Port Hope. There doesn't seem to be a lot of engagement. There seems to be half the time that they are spending now with council. I understand they've given themselves a bit of a pay bump as well. So those are issues that are probably going to come along. And here in Coburg, I just want to see them move forward with the governance model. I want to see a more broader approach from council on, you know, who's responsible for what. You know, you don't necessarily have to keep people in a silo. You know, the idea that they can be open silos, which is great. It's like, I don't know, it's like open concept government. We have open concept housing. Why don't we have open concept government? I think that's something I'd like to see maybe a little more of. Folks, you've been listening to The Drive Time. This has been our year in review. We didn't even get to everything.
No, we didn't. But it has been a great conversation. And David, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really enjoy talking to you.
Well, I appreciate you being here every week, Rob. Always appreciate that. And by the way, I want to send a shout out to my friend, not Calgary Glenn. Sorry, Glenn. It's Canadian Glenn. Canadian Glenn up there in Edmonton. Thank you so much for tuning in, Glenn. I really appreciate it when you give us your calls. And I really appreciate it when you can drop a note to us as well. Thanks for listening. And thanks for tuning in to Northumberland 89.7. This is The Drive Time. Folks, we're going to leave with the Bells and Moody Manitoba, which was our opening theme song for the first little while till we both got sick of it. Here they are, the Bells. Nothing says Canada like a Moody Manitoba here on The Drive Time.
to bring me a letter.